Right, shall we get going, Dan? How are you doing, mate?
All good, all good. We've had a couple of weeks off, refreshed, ready for the running, I think, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, although we've chatted about doing an episode with Aurel for quite a while, and I almost feel like we're a week or two too late because it feels like things are starting to get wrapped up in the Premier League, but I'm convinced Aurel's going to be able to bring the numbers to light.
Well, the problem is it was quite a difficult negotiation with Earl's agent to get image rights, to get all of the consents required. Maybe this is just a terrible lawyer joke, but needless to say, we've now got him on, and yeah, we're really happy to get you involved, Paul.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, very good.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, so for listeners for the first time, or for those joining us, so Earl is a senior data scientist at 21st Group, which is the firm that we both work at, and anyone who follows Aurel on Twitter will know that he's a keen tweeter of some of the outputs from our league projections models, particularly some of the conditional probabilities and things, how things change over the game weeks, which are well worth a follow. So I remember tweeting sometime in January saying that I thought this was going to be perhaps the best ever Premier League season, because you had a 50-50 title race. You had pretty much, you had Man U, Newcastle, Liverpool, Spurs, Brighton, all in the top four race. And you had about nine teams that could go down. But it's not, I guess there's not quite as much jeopardy now. So what's the kind of state of play as we enter like the last four game weeks or so?
Yeah, well, the good news is that the title race, the top four and relegation is not completely done. So the title race at the minute, as you kind of mentioned, Omen, before, has massively swung recently after City beat Arsenal. So we currently project Manchester City to have a 92% chance of winning the Premier League title again, and Arsenal down to 8%. So yeah, not too much jeopardy on there. But again, Big Sam has kind of returned to Leeds, and that's their next match. So we can talk a bit about those conditional probabilities if City were to hypothetically lose that game in a little while. And then, yeah, for the top four, Newcastle and United both above 90% to get those third or fourth positions. But Liverpool and Brighton and Spurs, it's not completely done, but they're all below 10%. But then the relegation battle is really where it starts to get quite interesting. So although Southampton probably need a miracle, they're on about 97% chance of going down. There is about four teams that have almost an even chance of going down, which are Everton, Leeds, Forest and Leicester. So there's a lot to play for at the bottom of the table.
Yeah, and I think obviously, I think by the time this gets shared as a podcast, the games tonight certainly would have been played, so the Arsenal-Chelsea game tonight. But we can maybe touch on that title race first. So what happens if, say, you know, Man City lose against West Ham, which is unlikely, but what, how would that kind of open the door for Arsenal?
Yeah, so City play West Ham tomorrow, and they're obviously favourites being at home, just given how good they are. But there is a 17% title swing for Man City tomorrow, depending on whether they lose or win. So what we mean by that is if they win, they'd be up to 94%, but if they lose, they would drop to 78%. And Arsenal would obviously bump up to 22%, so almost a 1 in 4 chance. So unexpected, but there's still a massive swing in every game that Arsenal and Manchester City play between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, and presumably that'd be even higher if Arsenal get their win against Chelsea.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah.
About 1 in 4 if they beat Chelsea. And you always kind of, at this stage of the season, you're always playing, well, what if, you know, if they do that and we do this, then what's, you know, maybe we stand a chance, you know, then it'd be back in our hands or whatever. But yeah, invariably doesn't work like that. Invariably, you don't get the results that you want. And then, yeah, relegation. I mean, I'm kind of, I think the biggest surprise for me is like Bournemouth now, that in our league projections, there isn't even a single simulation where they're relegated, Aurel, is that right? Or they're very, very unlikely to go down?
That's correct. Yeah, they're very, very unlikely to go down. It's really interesting what 3 points does at the end of the season, or 3 to 6 points in a couple of games. I think we had them at about 20% not too long ago, or a bit higher than that, but they've managed to get a few wins, two in their last four, I think. And all of a sudden, you know, they're kind of almost in a safe position. Similarly for West Ham, they're only 1% chance to go down. If they can get another win, they should be safe. So that 40% magic mark still seems to kind of hold true so many years later. So those teams at the bottom, trying to get a win like Leicester tried last night or Everton, I think can have a massive impact at this point of the season.
Yeah, I think that 40-point mark was, like, it used to be almost a truism. I think there were, I think even West Ham were once relegated with 40-odd points, probably about 20 years ago now. And I suspect it's become even more of a truism since kind of you've got teams now winning 90-plus points in the title race, which means that teams at the bottom are probably going to have fewer points, towards the end of the season. And I think most people have established it's kind of more like 38 points, but 40 is a nice round number. And feels like a kind of still a useful benchmark. Go on.
I was going to say, I completely echo what you mentioned, but an interesting one as well, actually, there is a few games at the bottom of the table of teams still playing against each other. So, for instance, Forest are playing Southampton, and this could have a massive swing in relegation chances. So 48% swing for Nottingham Forest. If they were to win that game, Forest would kind of drop down to 30%, so 1 in 3. But if they lose it, they'd bump up to 78%. So that, again, they'd be in a very difficult position. So there is a few more interesting games at the bottom of the table that could have a big, big swing, like the Everton-Leicester game last night.
And the Forest-Brentford game on the weekend. So am I right in saying had Forest held on to their 1-0 lead, that had been kind of down at 20%, and instead they're up at kind of close to 60%.
Exactly.
It's kind of crazy because they were 1-0 up until the 82nd minute, 81st minute. Instead of being probably fifth favourites to go down, they're now basically joint. I mean, essentially joint second favourites, Everton and Leeds. Forest, as you said, they're all pretty much the same. Same multiple, kind of 50-60%.
Yeah, exactly. It's also interesting, yesterday during the Leicester-Everton match, where we're able to now track live probabilities of the league during a game. So there was a point where Everton were about almost 50% chance to kind of go down. And then they kind of dropped that down to about 25% at one point as well. So even within a match, there's been massive swings in terms of team survival chances, especially in those games towards the bottom of the league.
Yeah, and everyone kind of looking at each other's games. But it's kind of fascinating. And then Leeds have got City on the weekend. Obviously unlikely to win that, but if they do, I guess it's big boost for them.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I think they've just might have announced their Sam Allardyce appointment, so a massive job for him. But again, if he's able to kind of save them, that will be probably one of his biggest achievements in recent times. But yeah, there's a 46% relegation swing for Leeds. Again, they're away, so unlikely. But if they were to win that match, their relegation chances would drop to 16%. But if they lose, it'd be 62%. So there'd be odds on to kind of go down. Which is kind of the more likely result. But the manager bounce, if it's ever really needed, it's now for Leeds, as we estimate them to finish 18th in the league. So they do need to start getting points on the table.
Yeah, I'm. It's almost disappointing in a way that so Man City are playing, and say West Ham, Leeds. I guess they played Arsenal late in the season. Dan, we spoke about this before on like sporting integrity, but I'm coming round to the idea that I think competition should be scheduled in a where you try and optimize the number of games that are total knife edge games. So Forest versus Southampton is obviously a really good game. I mean, Everton Leicester, you might not have predicted at the start of the season that would be a relegation fight. You probably actually might have thought it'd be like obviously European, at least mid-table battle. But I think I almost want more of these kind of crazy swing games where it's not just a swing for one team, where Forest go from 20-60% to go down, but also if the opposition were also swinging like that, I think that'd be it's something for schedulers to bear in mind, because at this point of the season, like, you're really looking for those really exciting games.
Well, I think also, Omar, I think I read about it the other day that I think, if I'm correct, that at least the next 3 out of 4 Leicester games are on a Monday after all of their rivals have played. And I think Dean Smith was talking about the fact that he thought, quite interestingly, psychologically, he came out and said he thought that was quite a disadvantage for the club after that you're already after the scheduling and the fixtures have already actually happened. But I think that must be quite a significant disadvantage to be each game week playing at least one day after all of your competitors. Sometimes it might be obviously a fillip if everyone else has lost, but otherwise, you know, to have that pressure of teams winning and then having to match that or otherwise must be very tricky.
Yeah, I think that's a bit of expectation management from Dean Smith, because I think other clubs would say, well, they get to react to our results. Now, I remember looking at, I've been asked this before, to what extent is games in hand an advantage or disadvantage? And I remember looking at this when we had the season that was paused for COVID 3 years ago. And the answer was it didn't really matter either way. Basically, it was quite a boring answer. But basically, teams that have games in hand do kind of know better or worse than you might otherwise expect, given the fixtures they have remaining. So it kind of cuts both ways. I think, obviously, if the teams around you get good results, it does pile on the pressure, but they might not get good results. The whole point is that sometimes they might get good results, sometimes they might get bad results, and you don't really know, and therefore it's no real advantage or disadvantage to go later. I suppose on the final day of the season, you want everyone playing at the same time, because then you can really obviously play out the results that you want to play out, and obviously no one does that anymore, playing not simultaneous games.
My last bit, Omar, was just before we go on to obviously talking about Champions League and other UEFA competition projections, which are fascinating, I think, in loads of different respects that you're going to go on to. And then obviously with we're going to do a little bit of discussions on how badly we fared on the prediction scale with Haaland, bearing in mind his fantastic goal situation. But you've got Man United and Newcastle at 93% and 95% respectively for top four finish, which suggests then Liverpool still have a tiny bit of an outside chance of 11% of ability to qualify for Champions League. Are there any swings that I'm putting you on the spot now, or potentially that would then disproportionately change that those percentages at all for any particular Man United game or Newcastle game? Because I think United are Brighton on Thursday, and there's United still got a few more tough games as well as Newcastle. Could that swing disproportionately change anytime quickly? I'm just looking for any type of hope, basically.
I don't know if you got the numbers there.
Well, there is a possibility that Newcastle's next game, they have, if they were to lose, they would drop to 88%. So they would be dropping by about 8% from where they are. Part of that would go to United, but quite a big part of that as well would go to Liverpool. So they do still have a chance to perhaps jump up to 15% without playing a match, but they would need quite a few things to kind of go in their favour. And Newcastle's recent form, having won their last 3 games, I think, I suppose that they're in a pretty strong position. But it could be United that playing a very long season across a number of different games that could perhaps slip up. They've got a history of doing that recently, being a United fan, so we'll see. So I'm on the opposite side of the fence on that one.
Yeah, so you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah.
the amount of replies Arel gets on Twitter, people doing the dumb and dumber clip of you saying there's a chance, I think it's kind of the kind of token response to seeing a 2% or less than 1% chance of playoffs or title or whatever.
Does that make me Jim Carrey?
I'm afraid it does. Yeah. it's interesting looking at the kind of projected points for teams. Like Man City projected 89 points, which is more than I think we probably ever had Arsenal. I think, well, correct me if I'm wrong, we had Arsenal probably favourites for the league over 50% at certain points, but never more than 60%.
Correct, yeah, there was a big proportion, I think, from end of January, where Arsenal were above 50% quite regularly up until quite recently. But yeah, never more than about 55%.
Yeah, and I think this goes to the point as well around, you know, there's obviously a lot of chat on social media. A lot of it is, I think, probably tongue-in-cheek around Arsenal, quote-unquote, bottling it. But they were never really on for more than, call it, 87, 88 points. Man City are going to finish 89 points. So even if they had, even if they'd maintained the kind of level of performance that they had in the first part of the season. And yes, their points per game was excellent, but you were never going to be able to sustain that level of points per game given their underlying performance. There was always a chance that they were going to have a drop off. And yes, they dropped off to a lower level. They projected to get about 84 points in our model, but the odds of them getting 89, 90 points at any point in the season was pretty low. And I think this season is, again, as much about Man City being ridiculously good. I mean, they went into the season expected to get 90 points. I mean, that's normally get to get 90 points, you need to have a little bit of luck. Man City were expected to have kind of even luck and get 90 points. So, yeah, tough on Arsenal. And yeah, fair play to them for making it an interesting title race, because actually it could have been rather dull.
I also do think that the Premier League, last point on this, is worryingly could come to a stage where you do need to beat Manchester City home and away to have any chance of winning the league, or at least in one of those games. I think they're too dominant if they beat you across both matches to kind of fight for the title. So I kind of worry that it is going to get to that stage where you could win all your matches, or most of them, but if you lose against City in both games, then you can't win the league.
Yeah, it's a really good way of putting it, actually. Yeah, it's kind of, yeah, you've got to win those cup finals. And it's a really, really good way of putting it. Let's get to Champions League. Well, speaking of City, let's get to Champions League. Where are we at with the four teams remaining in the Champions League?
Yeah, so City to the Champions League. And if we quickly just link it actually to their chances of winning a treble, we have them on about 44% chance to win the treble. So they've probably, got that, one of their best chances that I can remember in recent times to kind of get the treble. One of the reasons for that is because in the Champions League, we have them down as favourites. So we have them at 58% chance to kind of win the Champions League for the first time in their history, and we give them about a 71% chance of beating Real Madrid. So it's if they can get through that, that game would have them as heavy favourites in the final.
Yeah, I'm just doing the maths on that. So they're 58% to win the final out of 71%. So we would make them about, if they were to make the final, about over 80% chance of winning the final were they to get there, which is kind of indication of just how good they are. I mean, I'm looking at our team ratings and they are miles ahead of Bayern Munich, aren't they? They are, in our model, they're kind of 100 rating points better than Bayern Munich, which, the gap from Bayern Munich, then 100 rating points down, is down to like pretty much Man United's level. So Man City are as much better than Bayern Munich, or as much better than Real Madrid as Real Madrid are better than Man United, which is enormous.
Yeah, and for context, for listeners as well, we rate, the only team in the last 10 years that we rate as good as Manchester City today is the Barcelona team in 14-15, with the front three of Messi, Neymar and Suarez. But even then, they only kind of managed to touch that level and then not sustain it for too long, whereas Manchester City and our ratings have a very smooth line for the last 4 or 5 years where they've just been performing at a kind of abnormal kind of level.
Yeah, I think this is the question that gets raised quite a lot around the Premier League and its competitiveness and the extent to which, it looks like City will win, what is it, am I right in saying the fifth title in 6 years? Or am I exaggerating that? Something like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fifth title in 6 years, and people kind of questioning the competitive balance of the Premier League, comparing it to France or Germany or whatever. And I think the bare facts aren't great. I would say that there's been a competitive title race in, was it three of those 5 years? So not 2020, 21, and not 17-18. So that you could have more, you've had competitive title races with different teams, with Liverpool and Arsenal, which puts it apart from those other leagues. And also it's this question of like how much of City's dominance is Pep. It's enormous, and yes, they can attract Pep because they've got enormous wealth to be able to attract a coach like that. But this level of performance, I think it'd be really surprising to see it sustained if and when he were to leave. It just feels like a long, long way away now. And then let's look at you know, some of these conditional probabilities on the first leg. So we got Man City favourite, and then we've got Inter as favourites over Milan.
Yeah, so we've got Inter slight favourites over Milan at 56% chance to reach the final compared to Milan at 44%. So not much in that game on paper, and it should be quite close. And then overall, we've got Inter Milan as you say, second favourites on 16%. Not much difference between Real Madrid on 15%. This doesn't account for the kind of heritage Real Madrid, I suppose, have in the Champions League, where they can kind of, you know, get a result from really kind of unlikely circumstances. And then Milan down on 11%. If Milan were to kind of, even though we've got them down as the fourth most likely team, if they were to get a result against Inter and, let's say, win the first leg, they would jump to about 20%, so 1 in 5 chance of lifting the trophy. So, I mean, I think it's quite impressive to have two Italian teams in the semi-finals of the Champions League. I think if you'd asked people a few years ago, that looked quite unlikely. So I think it's a big success for Italian football.
And on that Real Madrid point around, like, the heritage and the competition, what's your view on the extent to which that should be priced in? Because we rate them as obviously a pretty good team. Like, we rate them as the third best team in the world. But, you know, a long way away from Man City. Do you genuinely believe that that is worth another 5 percentage points? Or is it like, is it just something that a narrative that we draw because we see it and then we assign value to it?
Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, it's a difficult one to quantify because, in my opinion, I think it comes down to a psychological, perhaps, perspective for players facing them. And once you know Real Madrid have won, I don't know, 5 of the last however many Champions Leagues, there probably is a mental state that players kind of go into if they kind of go behind, or if they're leading, they're still never sure when Real Madrid might kind of turn the game around. So I think that there's that aspect, but yeah, I suppose it's hard to quantify. I think about around 5 to 10% could be attributed to that. There is a bit of recency bias where you saw them turn around a number of games last season on their run to the final, and you know, it's football. At the end of the day, you're not sure. It's very unlikely that they'll be able to kind of repeat that, but I do think there is an aspect in that they have experienced something City don't have, and sometimes that does matter in the Champions League. But it's going to be a really interesting game.
Yeah, I always grapple with this because it's one of those things that it matters until it doesn't. you sign value on it, and then a team overcomes it, and you go, oh yeah, well they overcame it, and therefore it didn't. It doesn't matter as much. It's kind of a Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one. And then let's get to the other, wrap up with the other two European competitions, UEL and UECL. So who are the favourites and who are the outsiders?
Yeah, so the Europa League has its own Real Madrid in Sevilla. So this the kind of the Europa League on paper is looks a lot more closely contested. So we have Leverkusen currently as favourites on 35%. But then Roma and Juventus are on about 25% each, and we actually have Seville currently down at 13%. Seville haven't been doing too well in the league this season, but again, they're another great case of a team that is really able to kind of produce special moments in European football. So again, there is a case to be made that if you added Seville's, you know, Europa League factor, if there ever was one, that they could be a bit higher. But that one's quite close on paper, as I say, between those four sides. There isn't a clear favourite.
Yeah, and then the UECL, so we've got an English favourite in that as
well. Yep, so on the Europa Conference League, we've got West Ham currently as heavy favourites on 53%. So they're having a bit of a strange season where they're still at risk of going down, but they are favourites to win the Europa Conference League at 53%, as I say, followed by Fiorentina on 35%, and then AZ and Basel are both below 10%. So it's probably too much to say it's West Ham's to lose, but they are in a really good position to kind of lift their first European trophy, I think. So yeah, massive chance for them.
Yeah, it's quite nice as well to see. I mean, obviously the other lineups are dominated by big five league teams, but AZ and Basel combined 12% chance of winning a European trophy. The last non big five league team to win a European trophy, I guess. Well, I'm thinking about Porto in the Champions League. Did Shakhtar perhaps win the Europa League? But essentially, it doesn't happen very often. And AZ in particular, a very, very well-run club. So it's... yeah, it's kind of nice to see them kind of competitive and not totally unlikely to beat West Ham, a 1-in-4 chance of knocking out West Ham.
Yeah,
that
I think we were also discussing recently, Emma, if you remember, about the European coefficients as well. So that there will be some interest from certain countries, such as Netherlands, of wanting to root teams to get to the final and so on, because they might get an extra European spot for next season. And perhaps that's a conversation for another podcast. But I do think that makes it quite interesting that there will be those extra spots for some countries from next season to get European football.
Yes, yeah. So Netherlands looking to overtake France, and then also if we were looking at the way that places would be assigned, if we were at this point in a year's time, Italy and I think England would be in a very good place to collect an extra Champions League spot in the new Swiss style group stage. So yeah, certainly one to track going forward. And then yeah, Dan, I know you were very keen to reminisce about your Erling Haaland predictions, because the last time we had Aurel on, we were chatting about how many goals Erling Haaland would score in the league. And I think we'll just have to listen back. We'll have to find what we actually said. But it certainly wasn't 34 goals or however many he's actually got now in the league, at least.
Yeah, I was only going to briefly say is that I can't remember how far out my prediction was actually. So I'm just willing to listen to Aurel chat a bit more about where it might get to. But, you know, I think just very briefly, you know, I know this doesn't need to be a Haaland appreciation club for a few minutes, but to get so many goals and goals overall, which I think at the time of speaking, I think it's 49 for the season or 50 for the season now, 50 and 44, Aurel was mentioning, is just totally remarkable. And I just wonder whether, obviously, there's the only extra game he could play would be a Champions League final now if City get through, because it's obviously the FA Cup final. But, you know, him staying fit, you'd have thought that the number of games left still means that he's going to have a few more chances left, which could mean for one of the most unbelievable striking seasons of all time, literally.
Yeah, Omar, before you share those numbers, do you mind multiplying them by 2? I think that would probably put me and Dan in a better position.
Yeah, we can do that.
And then on Dan's point around Haaland, so yeah, we've ran some projections around the amount of goals that he could score a couple of weeks back, but we were quite confident about 30% chance that he's likely to break the 40-goal barrier in the Premier League. But there is some instances in some of our simulations that he does reach around 48 or between 45 to 48 goals. Very rare, but there is still a chance of that possibility.
Yeah, I could kind of... bonkers numbers. And I think it's kind of the numbers have been so big, we've had to kind of remove ourselves from the Premier League era and start comparing to like Jimmy Greaves and Dixie Dean and kind of names gone by, which I think is always the sign of a good record. Well, Aurel, I mean, been great. I really appreciate you jumping on. Always I think this time of the season, where you've got these, well, if they do that and we do this, and where are all these teams different at, particularly when we've got different number of games played and very different run-ins, I think it's quite refreshing to have a kind of probabilistic view on the run-ins.
Thanks a lot for having me. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks, and we'll work out if all the predictions are totally wrong next week.
All right, cheers, Dan. Cheers, Aurel.
Cheers, thanks.
Bye. Thanks for listening. You can follow me on Twitter, TikTok and Instagram at Football Lore, read my blogs and listen to my previous podcasts via my website, danielg.com/blogs. Please do subscribe to the Done Deal Football Podcast, like, share and tag me. If you like the content, if not my voice, you'll probably also like my book Done Deal, an insider's guide to football contracts, multi-million pound transfers and Premier League big business. A bit of a mouthful. It's available to buy in hard copy, digitally, and via Audible. All links are in the podcast show notes. Lastly, the podcast is powered by 13, which is a fashion brand I've started. All proceeds go towards cancer charity research, and particularly the stellar work done by John Krell, who has helped my mum through some difficult times over the last few years. You can take a look at the merch and hopefully buy a t-shirt, hoodie, cap, or all three. Please do spread the word and go to 13shop.co.uk. That's 13shop.co.uk. Thanks for listening.